Conclusion. The Machine. In New York's Zuccotti Park, the epicenter of a global anti-capitalist and anti-corruption movement that began in the fall of 2011 under the name Occupy Wall Street, protesters adopt the same tactics of angry, confrontational nonviolence that Birgitta Jonsdottir used in the Icelandic Revolution of 2009, that Daniel Ellsberg and Phil Zimmerman used in their Cold War protests for nuclear disarmament, that John Young used in the Columbia University occupation of 1968. They chant slogans, acquiesce to arrest without resistance, and carry signs. We are the 99%. Robin Hood was right. Free Assange and free Bradley Manning. And they also carry cell phones, almost all of which contain a video camera. Video clips that have emerged from the protests on websites like YouTube and LiveLeak include one of police pushing into crowds of demonstrators on the Brooklyn Bridge, grabbing protesters seemingly at random and dragging them out to be arrested as the crowd chants, "The whole world is watching." Others show unresisting protesters violently thrown to the ground and a group of young women surrounded with plastic mesh police barricades, and then, after they've been penned in, doused with mace and left blinded and screaming. Based on videos of that last incident, the policeman responsible was later publicly identified by members of Anonymous as Anthony Bologna, and John Young posted a 2001 indie media report to Cryptome that described the senior officer as notorious for his previous treatment of protesters. Bologna was fined $6,000 by the department and faced a further inquiry by the Manhattan District Attorney. The tiny cell phone cameras that filmed those incidents are the tools Rich Jones believes represent the next stage of the transparency movement. Jones, a gaunt 23-year-old Boston software developer with hair that flops over his ears, is the creator of a suite of simple smartphone apps with names like OpenWatch and CopRecorder. The programs run on Android and iPhone and allow users to press a button and start invisibly recording audio and video. That content is uploaded to Jones' servers, where Jones and his collaborators strip out any identifying information and post the file with a transcript. More than 100,000 users have already downloaded the apps, and they upload more than 50 videos a day. The goal, Jones says, is to create millions of reverse surveillance cameras that constantly keep tabs on authority figures. Since September 11th, the government's rhetoric has been that if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to worry about, says Jones with just a hint of righteous anger in his voice. I say, if those are the rules of the game, play them across the board. Show us what goes on. A few of the recordings Jones has obtained are disturbing, if not quite explosive. One audio file uploaded to the site captures a cop calling a detained suspect in a Durham, North Carolina courthouse an old-school pimp, denying his request to use the bathroom and asking that the detainee rap for him and flash gang signs. Another video file shows a San Diego policeman pull over a driver for a DUI check and then illegally search his car against the driver's wishes, flipping through the driver's wallet after he's alone in the vehicle. The video sparked a minor scandal in San Diego and was aired on the local news station. When I spoke to Jones, he was looking for volunteers to help him listen to hours of recording from the Occupy Wall Street protests, and he and his two developers had just been commissioned to build protest-focused apps for the National Lawyers Guild and the American Civil Liberties Union. I'd be surprised if we ever had our own collateral murder, says Jones. But we have 100,000 people who now see their phone as a weapon against corruption. It's not spies versus spies and megaleaks. It's about giving everyone a way to be subversive. Jones has no intention of rebuilding WikiLeaks, but he does say he was directly inspired by Julian Assange. He sees himself as part of the next generation of Assange's Bourbaki media movement, enabling scientific journalism that uncovers complete primary source materials for the audience and brings the public inside private, corrupt worlds. The idea is to create a more active WikiLeaks, one that isn't just receiving these documents, but actively capturing new data from secret places, he says. Here's a technology you already have, Here's a way to apply it to create a transparent society by force. I want to build technologies that make it possible for everyone to be part of leaking information. In 1999, a 19-year-old named Sean Fanning, working in the office of his uncle's internet startup, Chess.net, launched a music file-sharing service called Napster. Using the service, practically any MP3 file could be downloaded from another user's computer, and music, in its new diskless form, became essentially free. At its peak, more than 26 million people used the service, at a time when only about 500 million people had access to the internet. By late 2001, Napster had been effectively shut down. The company ran afoul of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, was hit with a $20 billion lawsuit by the Recording Industry Association of America, and went bankrupt in 2002. Aside from blatantly ignoring intellectual property law, Napster had made the mistake of running its peer-to-peer file-sharing index on a single, central collection of servers. Every search for a song required that central hub to connect the uploading user and the downloading user. The service that made enemies of some of the world's most powerful industries had a single point of failure. Around the same time Napster was being legally dismantled, however, a 26-year-old coding savant and former contributor to the Cypherpunk mailing list named Bram Cohen released a new peer-to-peer file-sharing protocol called BitTorrent. BitTorrent assembled downloads piecemeal from hundreds of users at once and kept its index of which user had which file available for upload on multiple tracker servers. Anyone could run a tracker server, making them far harder to shut down. More fundamentally, BitTorrent was a protocol, not a company. It couldn't be sued. Today, thanks in part to outlaw index sites like the Pirate Bay, BitTorrent now accounts for somewhere between a quarter and a third of the entire traffic volume of the global internet. Due largely to the free file sharing BitTorrent makes possible, the RIAA claims music industry revenue has been cut in half since 1999. From $14.6 billion to $7.6 billion. For a pair of Italian hackers hoping to reshape the future of leaking, there are worse models for changing the world. Fabio Pietrasanti and Arturo Filasto, the co-founders of Global Leaks, say they aim to create the BitTorrent to WikiLeaks Napster. Where WikiLeaks was a single vulnerable target, Global Leaks aims to create what they've called a worldwide distributed leak amplification network. Pietrasanti is a 30-year-old security engineer who looks like a 21-year-old actor, small, with big eyes and Tom Cruise hair. Filasto, on the other hand, is an actual 21-year-old former actor who spent 2 years playing the gangly, long-haired teen geek heartthrob on a popular Italian soap opera before leaving the TV industry to study mathematics and become a Tor developer. The software the two Italians and a few other coders have been working on, and the group merely aims to offer software, not run an active leaking service like WikiLeaks or OpenLeaks, is designed to allow anyone to set up a leaking conduit in minutes, using Tor's hidden services to offer a submission system that's both secure and untraceable. Unlike OpenLeaks, Global Leaks won't limit who uses its software and has posted its source code online for all to see, tweak, and use. Although the pair's work had yet to produce a leak when I spoke with them, they were busy meeting with any group who might consider deploying their software to host a niche whistleblower site. Two left-wing Italian political parties, a Serbian newspaper, an Italian energy utility that wants to facilitate internal whistleblowing, a British leak site called BritaLeaks, and even a Tanas Chobanov and a Sen Yordanov at BalkanLeaks. Their end goal, Pietrasanti says, is to expand the leaking movement from the current 50 or so WikiLeaks copycats to a network of hundreds or thousands of leak nodes, run by everyone from U.S. corporations that are legally mandated to run an internal whistleblowing outlet, to radical activists that hope to pass their materials on to publishers while using Tor to remain completely anonymous. like BitTorrent. GlobalLeaks aims to disperse the risk of handling sensitive material over an army of individuals rather than one vulnerable group of intermediaries. Some people may be like Assange and say, okay, we'll publish and fight and whatever, says Pietro Santi. But lots of people want to fight corruption without taking that much responsibility. If the risk profile of everyone who runs a leak node is reduced, there will be a lot more leak nodes. WikiLeaks taught us something, and it brought the word whistleblower back into the awareness of the public, adds Filasto. But GlobalLeaks is the next logical step. My time in the orbit of WikiLeaks and the inchoate movement it represents began with Assange's challenge to the American financial system in November 2010, a promise to take down a bank or two. Less than a year later, and just 5 years after Assange had vowed in a letter to Daniel Ellsberg that he would place a new star in the political firmament of man, the finance giants had taken their revenge and seemingly dragged WikiLeaks down to earth. In a halting statement at the Frontline Club in London in October 2011, Assange explained that Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, and Bank of America had successfully starved WikiLeaks of the cash it needed to survive. The financial embargo on the group had reduced the group's funding from donations of more than $300,000 in the 24 hours before the embargo to a trickle of less than $10,000 a month. If WikiLeaks does not find a way to remove this blockade, we will simply not be able to continue by the turn of the new year, he told the crowd. Money, of course, was only one of the growing number of forces paralyzing WikiLeaks. Assange himself remained chained by an electronic manacle to Ellingham Hall, the mansion where he had already spent 322 days under house arrest while appealing extradition to Sweden for questioning regarding his alleged sex crimes. Meanwhile, an American grand jury secretly debated whether he should be charged in the United States and extradited for trial. Many of his most ardent supporters had abandoned his cause after WikiLeaks' publication of the entire unredacted cables. And the group's defectors within OpenLeaks had, with whatever intentions, critically damaged both WikiLeaks and the reputation of the system they had hoped would replace it. Shortly after Assange's speech about WikiLeaks' financial problems, I contacted one of the group's technical volunteers, perhaps the youngest to work with WikiLeaks at the time, by encrypted instant message. Like the architect, he had never told me his real name, and in publishing this interview, he asked that I not even use his pseudonym. The young engineer was, understandably, demoralized. "I think WikiLeaks is at an all-time low," he wrote, calling the group stagnant and broke. "It's not the WikiLeaks that came out with collateral murder. It's like a decaying New York City metro station. I feel like an old-timer talking about the good old days when I remember what WikiLeaks was. It was fucking amazing a year or 2 years ago. It was the most beautiful thing ever," he wrote, unloading his feelings without my prompting. Assange, he said, had wasted WikiLeaks' enormous political capital and substantial donations. "I love him. He's awesome, but I just wish he hadn't thrown it all away." But then his tone changed, and he expressed the message that has kept the ideals behind WikiLeaks progressing for generations. "Maybe one day, in a couple decades, when I'm 40, I'll have my own go," he wrote. "And maybe I won't fail." The cypherpunk drive to destroy institutional secrecy hasn't ended. Any more than it ended when Tim May shut down his BlackNet experiment, when Yolf Hausingius caved to the Scientologists and killed Pennant, when Mendax and the International Subversives were arrested by the Australian Federal Police, when Bradley Manning was thrown into a military brig, or when the anonymous hackers allegedly connected to the H.B. Gary hack were arrested. Today, the leaking movement is no longer WikiLeaks, or even OpenLeaks, Anonymous, or any one of the copycat experiments that are sprouting up around the world. As Jonsdottir had predicted, WikiLeaks has morphed into two things or 10, and then again into the 1,000 WikiLeaks that Domscheit Berg had once demanded. With all their variation in goals and means, OpenLeaks, IMEI, BalkanLeaks, GlobalLeaks, and even Jones's OpenWatch smartphone apps are all stepchildren of a movement that stretches back to the cypherpunks 2 decades earlier and the Pentagon Papers 2 decades before that. And with its greatest successes in just the last few of those 40 years, its work is only starting. After WikiLeaks lost control of the full, unredacted State Department cables, John Young posted a statement in the comments of an article on the website of the Economist newspaper. It was a carefully written passage, and it echoed the short speech he gave to the students occupying the Columbia Architecture Building 43 years before, the pep talk that energized the protesters in their moment of crisis. It read as follows. WikiLeaks has undergone several transformations during its short history, some quite wrenching and near fatal. It has surpassed them with renewed energy, as it will this latest challenge. What is admirable is how it manages to become more resilient and creative when the pressure is greatest. It will likely continue to face ever greater tests of its capabilities, which, for me, is a good prospect. For without the need to grow stronger, it will succumb to laziness and braggarty about the glory days. That may be inevitable, as Assange and his invention age into the senescence awaiting us all. Some of us have reached that point earlier than he, but also paid our dues, as he is having to do. Why not join him in paying your dues? Take risks greater than you can handle. Ride not his bandwagon, but build and drive your own, welcoming the ridicule, praise, and condemnation. If as persistent, courageous, and lucky as he, you just might become rich and famous as a reward for being admirable. Or you might be an utter failure, but better that than middling. The architect, when I met him at the Chaos Communication Camp, gave me no form of contact information. When I asked how I would find him again, he merely laughed and said that I should reach out to him through Domscheit-Berg. "Daniel is my proxy," he quipped. A bit of cypherpunk humor. The follow-up questions I emailed to the secretive engineer via his German associate were never answered. For now, the architect's pure pseudonymity remains intact. Somewhere he's building, testing, and tweaking a new, sleeker, more powerful version of the machine that kills secrets. If Assange ends up in a Swedish or American prison, if Daniel Domscheit-Berg's tarnished reputation takes him out of the leaking game, if BalkanLeaks gives up on influencing a hopelessly corrupt government, or GlobalLeaks and the other idealistic heirs of the leaking movement fail, or even if the next Bradley Manning is caught by law enforcement and faces a similarly chilling punishment, the architect will move on. Perhaps he'll take a different pseudonym, different partners, a different strategy. Or even if this architect retires, somewhere another nameless, faceless architect is coding another anti-secrecy weapon. Perhaps another one is reading the archives of the cypherpunk mailing list, or studying GlobalLeaks source code, or watching the archived video of Daniel Domscheit-Berg's talk at the Chaos Communication Camp and learning from his mistakes, as John Gilmore suggested future leaking advocates ought to. We don't yet know the names of the architects who will build the next upgrade to the secret killing machine, but we'll know them by their work. This concludes This Machine Kills Secrets. Please visit our website, www.tantor.com, for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers. Or call toll-free 877-7-TANTOR to request a catalog.